What it is, what it do. Welcome to a very special podcast here, brought to you by We Talk Podcast, We Talk Wrestling, in association with the One Fall Podcast, Fresh Take, and Stick Boy Productions. I'm Joshua Arbuthnot, joined by Mo and Joel. And today, a decade to the date, we look back at a tragic date in wrestling history and history overall, when the lives of Nancy Benoit, Daniel Benoit were taken from Chris Benoit. And we look back at this tragedy, how it affected the world of professional wrestling and the state it left it in. We're going to start with Mo, who has the most insight at this time. When this event had happened over 10 years ago, I was 22 years old. Joel, how old were you?
Oh, God, I was in junior high. I was transitioning to grade 9, so however old that is.
So Joel was still very young, so maybe even a little bit more interesting how you processed it, and we'll get to that. And then Mo, you're probably the one that was the most, had the better insight and the more life experience when something like this had happened.
This is obviously, like, you guys, I know, in contacting me, were very, careful about it, and you weren't even sure if it was something I would want to talk about, and I had to think about it, and because it's like there's no. Let's put it this way: we did a show a few years ago on Benoit, on We Talk Wrestling, and it was probably the worst podcast we ever had. Our energy was down. It didn't come off right. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't as cleansing as I hoped it would be. And I'm kind of hoping that in this opportunity here now, that the insight can be better and a little bit more distance from it. And it can be cleansing. Because this is something that it still weighs on me. Like, I think a lot of people who followed Chris Benoit and love wrestling, or, and being in the province that he was from, even more so, and watching him, seeing him right from the beginning of his career, it's how do you put it aside? And I still haven't been able to a degree, and I'd like to. So that's why I'm here, basically. I'm hoping that talking through this with you guys and getting different perspectives will help do that.
I thought it was interesting, the comment you said, where you hoped it would be a cleansing thing, because that's kind of something I wanted to, of hopefully it can be something, a cleansing of the palate, maybe talking about it a decade later. Joel and I, 2 years ago, did an Eddie podcast, and it's obviously much different circumstances. It's still sad that someone like Eddie Guerrero passed away, but once you get past the unfortunate early death of Eddie Guerrero, there's just a lot of happy memories thinking of Eddie Guerrero. And while there's happy memories in the ring of Chris, it's really hard to focus on those when the thing that outshines it is just so dark.
You know, that's the difference, right? Is I miss Eddie.
Yeah.
I miss him a lot because Eddie had, like, he had a spark. Like, you could see that twinkle in his eyes, and I miss that. Mm-hmm. You know, that he had that made him special. But the difference is I can talk about Eddie. I can easily talk about Eddie. I can go watch Eddie's matches. It's unbelievable to me now that it's been this long. I mean, it's hard to believe that it's been this long since the tragedy. But also it's amazing how little I've actually talked about, or how little I talk, even at the time. Like, it's just something you don't want to talk about because talking about it makes it real. But if you don't talk about it, it doesn't ever go away. And like you said, you never kind of get that closure. So, and that's the thing, is for me, is it's not just about the closure for me and you, but maybe it's the closure for the listeners of this show as well.
Yeah. And if we can give that, then that's absolutely phenomenal. So what I want to start with is just going to that day, and let's just, no interruptions, just give your initial thoughts before the Monday Night Raw happened, or after, let's say, after Monday Night Raw, going to that ECW, just your accounts of the how you heard the announcement.
Well, you know,
to
what,
the Monday Night Raw till the ECW portion with Vince.
I wasn't there for that. That's and I don't want to disappoint you, but I mean, you wouldn't know. But what it was I was out in the woods in BC.
Oh,
and
okay.
I was gone for that weekend, and I wasn't back until in a little past midnight, Raw or Monday night.
And that's when it had broken that he did the murder.
You know, but I mean, I was exhausted. I was coming from it was like a work camp type thing that I was doing.
Right.
And where they didn't allow us any sort of you know, news. Actually, you know what? It would have been even later, maybe another week, probably another week.
Wow.
Now that I think back on it, because Addy, my We Talk Wrestling co-host, would be called my sister, and it's like, where is he? I got to talk to him. And she's like, you know, he's not. And he told her. He said, when he gets home, I don't care if it's 3 a.m, you get him to call me. And he was waiting and trying for days. And anyways, I wasn't actually there for that. So,
interesting.
So I didn't know. Like, this stuff had been going on for days, and I didn't know. I think it was actually like a Wednesday when I came back. So, you know,
wow.
A couple days after.
Okay, cool. Interesting.
And so I mean, I go to sleep, you know, exhausted, happy to be home.
Mm-hmm.
And I wake up the next day. I got one more day off work. And I go and check the computer to check the wrestling news. And you know, I open it up and see the headlines. Chris Benoit, dead. And then see the further headline. Chris Benoit, his wife Nancy, and son Daniel, dead. So I go, oh my God. Like, Chris Benoit died. Like, I saw that headline first. And my thought is, oh my God, heart attack, some sort of overdose. I hope not with Chris. You know, heart attack was my first thought because that was what got Eddie. And then I see that, you know, Nancy. And so I'm like, oh no, they were in a car crash. They're in a car crash. That's the only possible explanation for all three of them being dead. They were killed in a tragic car crash. No other possibility exists, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't go to think with Chris Benoit to think murder right out the beginning.
No. So was I you know, then I click the article and I go in and I see this. And I see this news. I don't know how I processed it. I really went into kind of a zombie trance, as I'm sure a lot of people did.
Yeah.
And how it was I was living with my sister. We had bought a house together. She had kids, and I was helping actually to raise her kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was going to school, and she couldn't afford the bills, and this was, it was a family thing to do, you know. She had three kids, and she was a single mom. And I had taken, you know, I love wrestling, and they would ask me, and I'd be watching SmackDown, I'd be watching these things, and they're like, why do you love this? And I said, well, a lot of it is just so proud of these people, you know, these people from here. And I showed them her kids wrestling with Shadows, and explained how Bret Hart. And then I took out the Hard Knocks Chris Benoit DVD, and I showed them that. I said, man, this is it. This is somebody who's worked hard, who you can admire, who you can be somebody that's. He's achieved something. He came from here. He has the same roots as you. You can do anything you want to do in your life, as long as you want to work as hard as someone like he did. And you know, and Chris Benoit was my niece's favorite wrestler because of this. And they didn't become huge wrestling fans, but you know, and the next day. I came upstairs and they invited me for lunch because I had the basement portion of the house. And we come upstairs and they're all there and I was really quiet, and they're like, what's going on? And I'm like, well, someone I sort of know passed away. That's how I put it, right? Because I didn't know how big it was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that it was in, you know, how much it had hit the other parts of the news media and culture, and they're just like, and Heidi, my niece, just goes, Chris Benoit. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know about this. So everybody knows about this. And I had such guilt that I'm like, because they're still young. I think she was like 16 at the time, and the other one was 15, and the other one I think it was like 8, and that one I haven't really showed, but those two, the 15, 16-year-old, and I'm like, I'm like, now this man who's done this, I told them, like, I felt such guilt for doing that to them now, mm-hmm. on top of it. So it was, like, it was incredibly, so that was on top of it. So it wasn't just for me, oh, no, somebody I admire passed away, and, oh, no, how could this be Chris, because I loved Chris, because, you know, I grew up watching him or whatever. Or, you know, it was also, how does that make me look to them? But also more, does that hurt them or damage them? Like, what have I done to them? So I had that guilt. So it was a really, this is a heavy podcast, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely.
But I'm trying to be as honest, and I've never really explained this.
That's what we're trying to get. You're trying to get the feeling that day, and I'm sure Joel and I will have. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Similar heavy, but we both have heavy thoughts. Joel, do you want to go or do you want me to go?
I can go.
Okay, sure.
So, like I said, junior high. So I basically, like, when I really, 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 really got into wrestling, like, really hardcore, after Austin and all of them had kind of moved on, it was that 04. It was that whole run from Royal Rumble to 20. Which, you know, I never saw live. I sat there because just didn't have the funds to order the pay-per-views. But I was sitting there on the dirt sheets refreshing because there was a website called Raja, something like that.
Yeah, that, still around.
That, oh yeah, and still go to it to this day. And I'd go to, and it'd have like the live results. So refreshing it for 20 and refreshing it to find out. I was like, Benoit better win. Sure enough, Benoit won. And then you see that moment afterwards, and it was one of the greatest moments in wrestling. And then you fast forward to that weekend, and I remember hearing that Benoit no-showed for the NED Champions. Didn't order that pay-per-view. It's like, oh, that's weird. And thought nothing of it. I had that Monday off, so I was at home with my sister, and we would sit there and we'd play a game where we'd have our own, like, draft lottery, because I thought I'd heard a rumor that there was going to be another draft lottery and they were going to swap guys. So we would write the names, the wrestlers' names on a piece of paper, and we would, you know, we would randomly draw, but she took
it. Actually, you already been one 2 weeks ago, because that's how we went DCW.
That's correct. So yeah, that's probably why we were doing it.
Yeah.
And she pulled out Benoit's name and gave it to me and said, here, you can have him, because that's the one that you want. The day, that Monday, of everything that happens. So we're mm-hmm. doing that. We're joking around, and we're getting ready for Vince has blown up. And then my dad calls, and I think it's something hockey-related. And he's like, are you sitting down? I'm like, no. And I'm thinking it's something Flames-related. So I'm like, okay, I'll sit down. He's like, Chris Benoit is dead. And it just kind of sat for a few seconds. I'm like, what? He's like, Chris Benoit, his wife, and his kid is dead. And I'm like, whoa, what? Huh? Like, just shocked. Absolutely floored. And so my first instinct is dirt sheets. Start going to the dirt sheets and start refreshing it through and trying to find any information. And all I can find is they're dead. And Monday Night Raw will go on. And by that point, I'm like, okay, gotta watch Monday Night. So watch that whole show. And just that tribute show. And it's just sad, because I'm just, like, floored. But something doesn't feel right for me. I just felt a little off about everything. And my dad was suspiciously quiet through all of it. I'm like, why is he suspiciously quiet? What's going on? What information is not coming out? And that night, like, I couldn't sleep. I was already pretty, like, that threw me kind of out of whack, but I, for whatever reason, I couldn't sleep. So I popped into my parents' room, and I kind of was sitting on their bed, because I would do that sometimes when I couldn't sleep. I'd just pop there, sit on the foot of the bed for like half an hour, and then usually I'd be able to mellow out. And so they start talking, my parents start talking to me about everything that's kind of gone on, and my dad kind of is like, yeah, it sounds like he killed them, and then he killed himself. And I'm like, holy crap. And then the next morning, and then subsequently that week, we still had school, like, but it was periodically. There were final exams, so being transitioning to grade 9, there was no need for me to be there certain days. I could kind of not be at school. But the days that we were, I just spent it into the computer room, just on the wrestling dirt sheets. I'd never done that before. I always waited till I got home, or waited to talk to my dad about what was kind of going on. But this time it was just refresh. And then watching CNN or whatever I could get my hands on for information, just everything. And then tracking down, because I didn't have access to ECW, so I could never see it until, so just would find that on the dirt sheet and then find out what Vince said. And read that.
Yeah, because you didn't have the YouTube option back then.
Yeah. So that's where I was kind of like, okay, got to find out that. And it's like, okay. And it's oddly enough, I would say a year later, there was a channel in Canada. I can't remember the channel, but they were re-airing old episodes of ECW.
Score, I believe.
No, it wasn't the Score. It was some
other Sci-Fi?
It was some other sports-like channel here in Canada that we had.
It'd only be Sportsnet or TSN.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Or is it like the outdoor like Life Network?
I don't know what it was, but they were airing ECW episodes, and I knew because I saw the previous episode that had aired, because they aired like two back to back, because this was a year after everything had happened, 2008, and so they aired the one with the go home before Vengeance, Night of Champions, so it had Benoit on it. And then they had the next episode where it was McMahon talking. And that was the first time I got to see that. And it's just like, wow. And you could just see, like, Vince's reaction. And just, it was just a chasing for information. Because, like I said, this is a guy I watched. And even beforehand, he was like, he's from Calgary. So from Alberta.
Edmonton.
This is awesome.
Edmonton.
This is great. This is exactly who I want to root for. This is, yeah. And he was really good. And, yeah, that's how that kind of week played out, was just refreshing dirt sheets and just trying. Because I didn't have there's not a lot of people at my school that were wrestling fans. So it was really kind of on my own and going at home and reading the dirt sheets over and over and over and over again, trying to find out something. And just not, and then listening to like Nancy Grace talk about stuff, which we can get into that later, which the media coverage of everything, and just listening to guys like Bret, Jericho, and Cena going on, Larry King to talk about stuff. That stuff, I knew what time it was going to be on, and I had myself situated, ready to watch it.
For me, so. It was kind of interesting you talked there about pay-per-views. I remember we had happened to get an illegal American satellite at one point. So all of a sudden we get the pay-per-views. Before, you know, you kind of had to, you know, maybe you can get Lucky's. Torrents were kind of a thing back then, so maybe you can download them, but it was still pretty rare. Or maybe you get the scrambled version and you kind of try to make things out. I remember doing that for some old ECW shows and WCW shows. But first one I got was the Royal Rumble that he won leading up to WrestleMania 20. So I had this huge, big introduction to this whole big Benoit run when I first had the pay-per-views. I never really liked the guy when he was in WCW. He was, you know, you'd always go into WCW and you want to watch for Hogan and Flair and the Outsiders and Goldberg. But then you get that undercard and you watch that guy. And it's like, man, this guy, he's so much different than these other guys. Like, it was at that early point in your love of wrestling where you're like, still kind of like, yeah, I love Hulk Hogan, but like this guy and this other guy, like, they're actually doing stuff in the ring instead of just kind of like throwing each other. Like, this is actually maybe more entertaining. I don't know, but I'm not smart enough to really know what's going on, but I like what they're doing. So yeah, but as my wrestling brain grew and I grew smarter within the business, he started to enjoy that, and he was definitely getting to the top of my list. Dare I say it, at one point, maybe number one right there with Kurt. So get home from school one day. I was at college at the time, Mount Royal. And get in, and my sister's like, hey, I got some unfortunate news. I'm like, yeah? She's like, yeah, you know, a wrestler died and his family died, and it was a gas leak. I'm like, oh, shit. Well, who? And first thing I'm like in my head, I'm like, don't be Benoit Kurt. Don't be Benoit Kurt. Don't be Benoit Kurt. So the two first names that came to my head. And she's like, oh, is this guy Chris Benoit? I'm like, oh, shit. So immediately jumped to CNN, try to find on. And that's at the time with the reporting, died in a gas leak. And it's like, well, damn, this really sucks. So changed the background of my laptop and my phone to pictures of Benoit, just in a way, a weird way to honor him and, you know, have some solo time to think about him and whatnot. At the time, you know, you could kind of, like I said, download some old shows. So me and my buddy had this hard drive that had some older Raws on it and some older WCW. So me and him watched a few Benoit matches beforehand, but we knew we were going to get some good stuff on Raw. And I was like, I remember turning into that Raw, and they had some matches when he was Pegasus Kid, and I'd always heard about that. I never was one into the tape trading side of things, or even seen any of his ECW matches, other than maybe on like a DVD here and there. But I was really excited to see some Pegasus Kid matches, and just to hear Punk talk about him, Austin talk about him, Regal, who was struggling, and you know, it was nice to see their thoughts about Chris, because I mean, one of the most iconic parts about that Eddie Memorial, as sad as it was just Benoit just being destroyed in the face of a best friend losing their best friend. And it destroyed you on that Eddie thing. So I kept on thinking about, man, like, this poor friends of both these guys, like Jericho and Chavo and Malenko. Like, Chris had a hard time dealing with Eddie going, but now both of these guys are gone, and they had my favorite WrestleMania moment of all time, and now it's just kind of two ghosts holding up these belts. So we go into the Monday, and you know, some words are going through that some funny business may have happened, but when I thought that, I was thinking, oh, well, maybe they were murdered, all of them together. Maybe someone leaked the gas into the house or something. I didn't put too much of it because Raw was going to air, and it was a Benoit tribute episode, so I didn't do anything. And I think it was, like I was saying, while you're watching the Raw matches, somewhere around in between there, CNN, BBC, all them start reporting that he had murdered them. I think it had came out just after the Raw taping. But I didn't want to believe it, so I was kind of naive to the factor and was like, no, Chris Benoit wouldn't do that. Like, this was the guy that cried tears and was disturbed when his best friend died 2 years ago. This guy, and he loved his son. That was part of that WrestleMania moment. He was hugging his son, and he fought to get Nancy away from Kevin Sullivan. That's a whole other story we can get to another day, but I was like, there's no way, like, he would do that. And then, you know, come DCW and you have Vince come on and make the confirmation. And you're like, shit, it's real. And then it took quite a few days to process it. And then you got to go through the motions of like, holy shit, like, he's dead. And then you're like, holy shit, like, he killed his wife. And then you're like, holy shit, he killed his son. That motherfucker. And it just all really starts to sink in. And yeah, then, I mean, much like all of us, it takes time to really process where you want to go with this entire situation.
I know for me, hearing about the wife and the son, I know I immediately started looking for an excuse.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's got to be, okay, there had to be a good, he had to have had a good reason. He can't have done that because he's that evil, that bad, that, mm-hmm. that, you know, I don't want to hate him. I don't want to hate him. I could lose him. That's tough.
That's a perfect line there. Losing Eddie was tough. Perfect line. Yeah, perfect line there.
But I don't want to hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the thing that it's like, I agree. I didn't, I still, that's the part that still is, that's the difference maker, isn't it? Like, that's the X factor in this whole thing is the wife and, more importantly, the son.
Yeah.
And then when you find out some of the details about how Nancy was killed, and then he took Daniel and, you know, played with him in the backyard. And
I know.
And Gabe tried to give him, like, a special day before taking his life.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, like, he didn't kill, you know, Daniel immediately afterwards or before. Like, after Nancy was killed, it's like, oh, no, I've killed this boy's mother. And now I have to kill him because he's going to live without his mother and I'm going to be in jail. And it's almost like he's thinking, I'm doing him, this is for his own good, but I want him to know how much I love him first. And I'm going to give him a special, and he gave him like a really special day, bought him like ice cream and, you know, like spent the day with him. And then that night took his life and then went downstairs and literally found the most painful, disgustingly awful way to die, to kill himself that he could. He didn't go take pills. He on purpose, not only did he hang himself, he did it in a way that it would be extremely painful and like punishing. Like the details around all this thing, that makes it so much tougher.
Yeah.
And it also makes me go, again, it also screws me up in my mind where it's like, how, like there's almost something, like I don't understand it, but I almost understand it. And so is there some way I can look at this and not hate him?
Well,
and part of it is selfish. I didn't want to lose his wrestling. I wanted to be able to watch his matches because they gave me so much joy over the years. He wasn't just good. He was brilliant in the ring.
He was ahead of his time. He was ahead of his time. That's
He's still ahead.
I want to ask kind of a dark question, but a question that a friend of mine brought up a long time ago with me. He said, what if he never killed Daniel and the Nancy situation was he still killed Nancy, but, you know, it was a fit of CTE, a fit of rage, pushed her the wrong way and killed her, but then turned himself in immediately? Because I don't know the circumstances around Nancy's death. Maybe you can fill us in. Does that change how we perceive him at all?
I think so. I mean, even I remember Joel, you brought up CNN and Nancy Grace and all this stuff, and Larry King, and I remember Chris Jericho talking about how like he would talk to Chris and Benoit and Jericho would be like, yeah, saying that, like his, like, you know, she'd be nagging him and she was really bugging him or whatever, you know, and whatever. But he said, but it's like a lot of the guys do on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to sound awful. There's no good way to approach this, so I'll just do it.
Sure.
The Wrestling Observer, Dave Meltzer, was printing the text messages and the messages that were on Benoit's phone between him and Nancy. And out of context, she did not come off very well. There's that old, you know, the old saying about a nagging wife, and it's not fair, and especially not fair in this situation.
No.
But because we're only getting one side of it, right? But this looked like there's trouble in paradise to begin with. So I guess if he had just killed her in a fit of rage and she's somebody who she stands up for herself and he's, you know, got the CTE and he got the steroids and in a fit of rage, it would be awful and it'd be unforgivable.
Yes.
but it's not inconceivable, is the way to put it. Awful, unforgivable, but not inconceivable.
The kid part is the part for me that always puts it over the top, man.
That's inconceivable.
It's every inconceivable. Every time I like, oh, I'm going to go watch Benoit and Kurt in the cage because that's one of my favorite matches. Or yeah. Benoit and Jericho in that awesome ladder match. And then I'm like, I get into it. I'm like, this match is awesome. It's as awesome as I remember. But then I'm like, this motherfucker killed his kid. Yes. And I just can't get over it.
I agree. I agree. That's the one where, and I know he was, like I say, I know he had the brain trauma. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had the brain of a 70-year-old Alzheimer patient, is what they said. I mean, he's practically liquid.
Yeah.
You know, and, but I don't care.
No.
You killed your kid. You killed your young son.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, this was again years ago, Addy, we were over at his house and we were watching some Owen matches. And because Owen was his favorite and he was getting really emotional. Like, he missed Owen. And then he turns to me and he goes, I hate Chris Benoit. And I go, you hate him? He goes, he killed this kid. I hate him. I hate his guts. And I hope he doesn't mind me saying that, telling this story. But I'm like, I don't want to hate him. How can you hate him? Please don't hate him. Because if you hate him, I got to hate him too. I don't want to. I've never been able to. And again, this is why we're talking about this. This is why we're looking for this closure. But how do you? Yeah, so I guess that I feel like if the Nancy thing, if it had just been her, we would have moved past it. The reason we're struggling to this day is because he also took Daniel's life.
Yeah. That's always been the hardest part for me. Like, as far as the matches go and everything, there's times if I'm watching the pay-per-view and a Benoit match comes up, I don't skip it anymore. I can watch it. There's still that in the back of your head no matter what, but I can watch it and to a degree enjoy it, but there's always that thing in the back of my mind. It's not fast-forwarding it anymore like I used to.
It's definitely affected my ability to go back and watch old pay-per-views or watch them on the network. More than that, I think since he's passed, I can barely watch Eddie matches.
Oh, wow.
It just reminds me of how much I miss Eddie, even though I can watch Eddie matches. Don't get me wrong. It's just that I miss him.
Yeah.
But I don't feel guilt for watching them. After, it was about a year or two after Chris had, you know, everything went down, I decided I'm going to try and watch some matches. And I watched him versus Eddie in the finals from the United States Championship Tournament when they debuted the belt in the WWE. And I watched the WrestleMania 20.
Hmm.
And especially the WrestleMania 20, I'm like, I still got into it. And at the end when he has, you know, Triple H in the crossface, I'm still waiting for, it reminded me of the moment. I watched that match at a movie theater. I was looking for some friends that would want to buy the pay-per-view. Nobody was really interested. I'd see if anybody wanted to go. Nobody wanted to go. I went by myself. I had to see Chris Benoit in that match. And if you'll remember, the build-up was he wins the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
You think he's going to go and challenge the SmackDown champion as where he is, and instead he shows up on Raw. And Raw has a feud between Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and he kind of gets, okay, he's getting Triple H. And then Shawn just kind of, no, my issue with Triple H is not done, and he kind of works his way in there. Mm-hmm. And my feeling at that point were two things. Was they did not trust Chris Benoit enough to draw for WrestleMania, so they're putting in Shawn Michaels. And they don't think that the match will get enough heat with Chris Benoit because he's not over enough, so they're putting in Shawn Michaels. And then go to the theater, and not only is everybody in the theater during that match screaming, but the Madison Square Garden crowd is cheering for Benoit over Shawn Michaels. You know, he's the favorite. Everybody wants him to win. I'm like, oh, they totally miss. But But it's an incredible match. And when I watched it back, that was the one thing I'm like, I still got into that match. That's still a 5-star match. I still love that match. Maybe I can watch them.
Yep.
And that's like 8 years ago. I haven't watched one since.
Yeah, it's hard.
I've never seen 20 because, again, couldn't afford it, so I never saw it. And by the time that there's potential for me to see it in its full entirety, everything had happened. I've never gone back and seen that on the network.
I've never watched that Raw. I mean, I had that Raw. You know, I taped it, and I held on to it for like 4 months. And then I deleted it, and then you have a chance. You can go watch it on YouTube or Torrent. Every now and then my curiosity of what it's like, but all those Raws are tough anyways. I mean, all the times that people pass, and you brought up the Eddie Guerrero passing. When Chris Benoit talks, he literally gets like about 3 words out.
Yeah,
and then he breaks out and just starts crying, and it's not a cry. I've never heard anything
blubbering.
Like it. It's almost like a primal.
You feel the soul break. You feel his soul breaking apart.
Right there. I have watched that since this has happened. And when I saw that, and I saw that again, you literally, like you say, it's so hard to explain, but that's a good way to put it. You see his soul breaking apart because it's like, he gets just a few words out, and then it's like a whale, like almost like an animal in pain. And I feel like he broke, like you say. And also he had lost people like Johnny Grunge, which are good friends, and Biff Wellington, who was just and Boss Man, Biff Wellington, and these
Jerry Martel.
According to
I believe Nancy's sister, was it Sherry or Bossman that was like one of the kind of the final straws for him that was starting to really mess? It was Sherry. It was like really, because Sherry died the week that Vince did the limo, so the week beforehand.
Yeah.
Well,
and then he did that. I was so pissed at the time that he did that angle right beforehand. But I just, when I saw that back, I thought right there, that's where his death happened. And in some ways, I think that's where Nancy and Daniels happened.
Well, didn't he have like a journal and the thoughts were getting super dark in it?
He had a journal, and in the last year or so, he had kind of started to put a lot of dark thoughts in there, but also a lot of lot of religious thoughts, which wasn't something really he had done.
No, and that's the big thing with the deaths too. He had Bibles next to everybody.
Yes, except he had for placed. Himself. Yeah, except for himself, which is, again, significant. All of this, there's a lot of symbolism, and that's what part of what I think, like books are written about it, and they want to do a film on it. And from a psychological standpoint, from that perspective, I get that it's fascinating. If you're not a wrestling fan, you can kind of take yourself apart from it. But if you're like us, it's like, he's writing all this stuff, like these quotes about the death and these things from the Bible, these different and scriptures, and it's like, but I really think that I really do believe if Eddie doesn't die, that Chris and Nancy and Daniel are still with us. And obviously I have no evidence, but there's this story of just a couple days or a few days before he dies, when he's talking to Regal on the phone. And Regal's interesting because I understand, I've never seen The Raw, but I understand he's the one guy who doesn't say really glowing things about Chris, that he's the one guy who you think he knows. And there's a whole thing about whether or not, you know, Vic McMahon knew, and he probably did before he aired this and all this stuff. But he shows up at Chris's house after Chris had invited him over, and Chris is basically not only... like, unless like a half hour later, not only does he not invite him in and say he doesn't, you know, he doesn't remember inviting him over, he's basically acting like he doesn't even know who he is. You know, it's...
I've never heard that story.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, it's just a few days beforehand. He shows up and he doesn't, he's almost like he doesn't even know who he is. And he closes the door on them, sends them away after he'd come over, drove a half hour to get over there. And it's like, and that's one of his best friends, too. It's such weird stuff in all this. And if there is anything good of this, and Lord knows it's not worth the
that,
price.
I think you're going to the transition I wanted to make, so go there, please.
Yeah, it's that I don't think we'll see that type of brain damage and that type of abuse of you know, narcotics and the type of things that was happening that also was part of this explosive cocktail that caused this event. And well, it's like I say, it's not worth the price, but it's something we can almost grab onto to make us feel a little better.
Right, Mo? If it wasn't for this, we don't get the wellness policy. We don't have the concussion.
We already had the wellness policy.
But to the degree addition that it was. It was a joke, right? So to have the three strokes, and you could argue, and Joel and I have had this talk off thing, guys like Jeff Hardy, who knows, MVP, who pretty much had his life saved by the new wellness policy for finding a health hazard that they wouldn't have found beforehand. So MVP could have possibly passed away. And then Daniel Bryan with what they've done now with concussions. Dolph Ziggler and Fandango both had major pushes derailed because of concussions that took him off TV. But, and same with Daniel Bryan, but we're better for it now. And it's funny that the WWE has learned their lesson, and it took a star of theirs passing away and doing a horrific thing, but sports like the NHL and the NFL still haven't learned.
Well, Jerry Jones is an asshat.
Yeah.
I was going to go back a little bit. It ties in with this, but everything that happened that weekend, It was, I don't think there's one thing that we could point our fingers to and go that. Like, you look at how the media did it. It was like, it's steroid, it was road rage, was some crazy wrestler. Wrestling was at a witch hunt at that point. I don't think it was solely that. I don't think it was solely CTE. I think, as Mo had alluded to, those text messages between Nancy and Chris, I've never seen them, so I don't know what's in them. But if it kind of leans to where you were describing, then you've got a situation. And the other big thing that I always go back to is the podcast with Nancy Benoit's sister. Mm-hmm. Like that was a wealth of information for us that we kind of sit there and we kind of look at now. And the way she had described it was there was, like, and she didn't go into detail on certain things. She wanted to keep some things private still. But it was a guy that was, he would drive to the gym in different directions. He'd go and he'd take different vehicles. It was small little things that I think this was a guy.
Paranoia.
Yeah, that was paranoid. And one of the fears was Daniel being kidnapped. That was one of the big things, was they had heard about a kid being kidnapped that was a pro wrestler. And Benoit had known that he was in the spotlight now because he got shoved in the spotlight in 20. And he had wanted that. And it was a guy that's career was starting to kind of enter into the twilight. It was getting to the tail end of it. He didn't have 20 more years of wrestling, and he only knew pro wrestling. But Nancy was getting him geared up for the Wrestling Academy, the Chris Benoit Wrestling Academy. They were going to open up a school. That was going to be the next thing, but I don't think he wanted to quite let go of the wrestling, him actually going out and doing it. And, I mean, the other side that doesn't get talked about a whole lot is he was divorced. So half his paycheck was going to up in Edmonton to his formal wife and his kids up there.
I'm just sure to clarify, and that he had cheated on that wife with Nancy, correct?
You know, I don't really know the details on that.
Okay, we'll plead guilty on not knowing that, but continue, Joel.
And so you've got like Hedmo said, it was a explosive cocktail. That I do think that there are some positives that came from it with the wellness policy and concussion, because concussions are something very serious that needs to be looked at, and really not just, oh, it's just like, I remember when I played football in high school and I had a concussion and I got the coach, a gym teacher, he was head of the football program at the school that I was at, had called me a pussy for not playing because I felt dizzy and nauseous because I didn't feel well, and that was his motivation in front of everyone, was to call me out because I wouldn't play through a concussion. And now fast forward to 2017, you look at concussions were one of the things that led to this event, and concussions are something that has led to several other different horrific events to different degrees. CTE is real. You need to really start to do more with that. But I think with the Benoit stuff, you know, we don't see those chair shots to the head anymore. Thank God. Because those were nasty. And you heard what were their names in ECW? They just escaped me. They both balls.
Axel and Balls?
Yeah. They would swing chairs at each other and see how hard they could hit each other. And it was a competition. And so you get breeded with that mindset, and Benoit came from old school. So it was still very much, you saw back in the Attitude Era, just open chair shots. Just swing for the fences, and Benoit took them. The diving headbutt is something that, a move that needs to be removed from all of pro wrestling. Dynamite, Benoit, Daniel Bryan. Those are three victims from that diving headbutt that needs to be removed, and it needs to be banned alongside a couple other moves. This whole event, everything that happened, and I didn't know I'd always tried to figure out what Benoit did with Daniel after he'd killed Nancy, because again, we go back to that Jericho podcast with Nancy's sister, and you hear that he brutalized her, that it sounds like that it was an absolute fit of rage, that was just almost like a blackout rage, where when you finally realize what you've done, and it sounds like she was absolutely brutalized. So now that thought pops into my head that, and I believe she was covered up with a carpet or a towel, or her body was kind of hidden off to the side, the last thing I'd kind of read. And you think that Daniel's going about his day, having, as you had said, giving him a great day. Well, his mother's dead off to the side. That's, I don't know about you guys, but I just still can't go back and watch Benoit matches. And I don't think I ever will, because it's just one of those things. And I know, like, the three of us aren't Jericho, Chavo. And Chavo's another thing that, Chavo rode with him. And he didn't notice anything. Chavo said he didn't notice any change in his memory. Chavo didn't notice anything about his personality, his over-religious personality. None of that was picked up by Chavo. And the flip side with that is what Jericho nicknamed him, the Loch Ness Monster. He'd pop up, and then he'd disappear. So this is a guy that was very, extremely private, extremely quiet, that would disappear. And it just seems like, I think, through the self-medication and through the obvious mental illness that was there, that was present and was growing and festering and blooming into something dark and horrific, there's no address to that. There was no... And I do side with Mo that if Eddie was still alive, I think Benoit would be too, because I think that was almost his therapist. I think that was almost what kind of talked him down, kind of brought him down. And I mean, the other thing that we have that wasn't spoken, touched upon, was Nancy actually got a restraining order from Benoit. They were separated. They were split because it wasn't like he was... punch you in the face abusive, as Nancy's sister said, but she obviously felt the need to get a restraining order and be away. Ultimately, they were able to reconcile, but that's the other thing. What if they
knew? That's the other thing, is that WWE knew that and ignored that, and today they wouldn't.
Yeah, they can't.
You know?
That would get into the news, and that would be, they'd be crucified for it. So it's that thing where now, and that's the other thing, where just in today's present mind, that's not acceptable. And he would have been in trouble for that, and they would have had to address that. There's a lot of, to me, there's never, and that's, I think that's the hardest thing for everyone, is there's not, everyone wants to cling to one thing. CTE, Roy Rage, Eddie's death, we desperately want to find that one logical answer. I don't know if there is a logical answer.
No, it's not one thing. It's all those things. Though I do think the CTE is the biggest factor.
Yes, personally.
I agree.
I mean, I like That's I mean, what you hear, like I say, I mean, his brain was mush.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was also the heat in Atlanta as well, was just how the body had reacted. But that's also, on the flip side, your brain shouldn't just turn to mush after a couple hours of...
No, no.
So. But let's get a little bit up and focus on some of the positives. Like the, I was saying earlier, the more reinforced side of the wellness policy and the concussion protocol that saved people's lives, like I said, MVP that got his, I think it was a heart thing, I believe.
Yeah.
Jeff Hardy, who knows? And I think the biggest case, and some people make the comparisons of the parallels, was Daniel Bryan. And you know, if they didn't have the things they do now, Daniel Bryan, and we'll find out in a year if he goes somewhere else, but in WWE, Daniel Bryan's not allowed to wrestle because of what his concussions are.
Thank God. As much as I miss watching him wrestle, thank God.
Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to hear is, like, something happened to Brie and Birdie. I don't ever want to hear that story.
Yeah, and I don't think you would, because the personalities are so wildly different, too.
Yeah.
But
you just never know with CTE, though, right?
You never... Well, that's the thing. The CTE, it's more... I look more at... the likelihood of something happening to them, I think that's unlikely.
So do I. Well, and I do agree, but, too, because Brian is more of a fun, loving man than Benoit was a very reserved man, and yeah. Brian is just so full of
by
life.
By his nature, he doesn't have aggressive tendencies by nature. It's more the depression. It's more it's more where I would go is the depression. It's more where I would go would be the Junior Seau's. Yeah. And we
saw that in Total Bellas, that Brian really suffered from that after... He had to retire. Like, it really hit him really hard.
Those of you who watch Total Bellas, those of us who are wrestling fans may not have seen that. But
hey, it was an important thing for Daniel Bryan's career to know that.
I know.
It's nice to add a little bit of. It's nice to add a little bit of levity and have a little bit of Mo back talk.
I've held it back a couple times here already because it's not the appropriate time. But
yeah,
but no, I mean, yeah, I mean, like I say, Junior Seau. And you've seen a lot of people in the NFL, you know, a lot of people who've committed suicide. And you've seen a lot of people who've committed suicide, people like Mike Awesome and people like that, who I'm sure the CTE caused their level of depression that was a big deal in their, own suicide. Or, you know, Canyon is another one. And then you... Or in hockey, I mean, it's no coincidence that the people in hockey who've been, you know, committing suicide, ex-players, are largely the enforcers that you know, Christopher Nyland and guys like this, whose job was to get punched in the face to protect the other guys. Like, so to me, that would be the biggest thing, is less likely that there's going to be that they're going to portray violence on other people, but more likely that the CTE causes the depression and the likelihood that they would take their own lives early, which is still a tragedy that shouldn't happen. I mean, Junior Seau was another one. I mean,
Wade Bielak was a big one.
Wade Bielak, yeah. Derek Bugard, Rick Rippin.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many. It's a tragedy, and you know, again, like I say, but Junior Seau to me is the one, because the amount of steroids he was doing and the amount of head trauma he had is to me the closest example to Chris Benoit. And even he hasn't had the influence on society at his early death that it should have, and certainly within the NFL. So you can applaud the WWE. Now, part of this is, you know... I mean, like you say, after Eddie dies, they put in this wellness policy, and it's a joke. It's for cosmetic purposes. And now this stuff is pretty real. It's more the protection of the wrestlers for the injuries and a better understanding of that, and especially the head trauma. I mean, let's be honest, the wellness policy is still somewhat of a joke. It's better.
Yeah, because Brock isn't getting, never got anything to it. When USADA went off on him, and they have their weird part-time thing, so if The Rock comes in, he's not going to get anything. Cena now coincidentally falls into that realm.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, heads up to them. Like, I still thought it was a big deal that someone like Roman Reigns, a big guy, didn't do the correct situation they wanted, and they suspended him. Stuff with Paige, where it's like, I didn't get my stuff in time. Well, guess what? That's too bad. We have a deadline. You didn't meet it. You're getting suspended. And I like that. I like that they are that strict on it. If we have a deadline, get it in by then. If not, no one is more special than the other. And show that with a guy like Roman.
You can definitely look at the WWE and see that there's ways around it, and there's guys who are lot of them. But I think it's more that if you don't want to participate in that, you're not punished. Your push isn't immediately ruined just because you're not as jacked as you could be. Yeah. Like I say, football has, in Junior Seau, somebody who should have made that same impact, and they didn't have the outside pressures that they should have, that certainly WWE fell under media scrutiny, and I don't think that they were unfair. WWE thinks they were unfair. I don't think they were unfair. I think they were fair because they were honest. So this is the stuff that's happening, and the amount of deaths that was happening was unbelievable in that period. Like, people don't even remember. We're talking about Benoit, but all the other deaths.
Yep. It was like Bossman, Bulldog. It was like Hawk. It was like every two months.
So many guys and so many ECW guys, which is why the fact that CZW still exists and gets away with the shit they're getting away with on their cars pisses me off to no end. But that's a whole other discussion. But yeah, I mean, absolutely that. There should have been the wake-up call in sports. There should be the wake-up call in hockey.
Even this past month ago, Giselle goes on the Today Show or whatever. Oh, Tom had a concussion but didn't tell anyone last year. Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Tom Brady, you're adorable.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, why are we not paying more attention to this? Why are we paying more attention to deflated footballs and making that a big deal? But your best player, arguably, had a concussion and checked back in the game, and we're just going to do nothing?
Yeah, getting the win is more important to everybody, to him and the league and the team.
Crosby as well. Crosby's the other big example. We don't know if Crosby should have been cleared to play in the Stanley Cup or not. We don't know. Probably shouldn't have been,
no. But that's the thing, is that the WWE, despite the fact that it was in some ways forced upon them, they haven't, now that they're far more out of the public eye, they haven't pulled it back.
No. Nope.
And I think we should applaud them for that.
Lord knows Daniel Bryan would love them to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, because for him, getting cleared by three other doctors but not theirs doesn't matter. He can get cleared by the doctor of the Cardinals, UCLA, and then New York one. But if he's not getting cleared by theirs, doesn't matter. And that's what I like about them, is like, our doctor is the final word, and that's the one we're going to trust.
Well, I think the big thing with that is, I think, while Guerrero's death hit Vince hard, I think the Benoit death really hit him.
Another reason why they took so long to get Kurt, because they didn't want another death, and they thought Kurt was dead man walking.
Yeah, so that's a big thing, where I think, as much as you will always have the jokes about Vince, we'll always have those memes about Vince. Vince is a walking, talking, interesting, rare breed of a person that we'll never see again. At the end of the day, he's still a person, and he's still close with a lot of these guys that have died. And every time someone has passed away that Vince has done business with, whether it's gone sour or not, that's gotta impact him. Like, I mean, you look at the guy was crying when he gave Shawn Michaels the Hall of Fame ring. Now, albeit there will always be those unsavory rumors about Shawn and Vince, but this is a guy that, you know, if you were to tell me back in 97, 98, if I was smarter to the business, that Shawn would OD in the early 2000s and be dead, I wouldn't have been shocked, because he seemed to be heading towards that pathway. He seemed to be heading towards just a very bad spot. And he was able to move past that, get himself clean, and now he had a second run with the company. And just to see that is remarkable. And I think that's part of the reason why Vince was so emotional during that, because he gets to see someone that was heading towards that very dark road that managed to steer himself back.
WWE still has a long way to go, but they are moving in the right direction. and as far as treating the people like people and understanding that they're human beings. There's still a long way to go, but I mean, and that's against the wrestling tradition since the early days, you know, to see the people as people and human beings, you know, outside of just a few promoters, but they're moving in the right direction, and that's good.
Yeah.
So we're near the end here. I just want to get some final thoughts on the entire situation. We're going to start with Joel, and then we'll go to Mo, and then I'll finish off, and we'll get out of here.
You know, I'm definitely going to have to take some time, some alone time after this podcast, because it's definitely, I've learned some new things, so that definitely is not, that's definitely going to take some time to process. But I think, as a wrestling fan, 2007 very well could have been leading towards the collapse of pro wrestling. That was the one thing that had happened, was with the media coverage during this. And just the media talked to the wrong people that had the wrong things to say, that had an axe to grind. And when you talk to the right people, you got more of the true story. It's not all black and white and sunshine and rainbows, and WWE was saints, but WWE aren't the absolute devil. They're not.
And Nancy Grace is a complete idiot, let's just say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. And there were a few others that, like that, was it Mark Merrill that came on and talked during that whole time?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the biggest idiot of all that we can all agree is Ken Anderson.
Well, yeah.
I think Ken Anderson, that was one of the final straws for him with WWE, was those interviews that he did.
He came off poorly. Yeah. So did Finlay, though. We put smiles on people's faces. Who do they think they are? Bailey?
Yeah. Not great. Blackman was one. Blackman wasn't bad. Marrows was up there.
Marrows was pretty bad.
Marrows was really bad.
I look at guys like...
Jericho was great.
Yeah. Jericho was fantastic.
Jericho was a voice of reason. And I look at Brett. Was another solid voice throughout that whole thing.
Well, people that knew the man, right? Yeah. Not people that were looking for their 50, an extra 16 on their 15, like Mark Merrill, for example, or Steve Blackman, or whoever else tried to sneak in and be like, oh, I'm a former wrestler, I'll talk about... And some of them were also, I think, just looking for an outlet because their friends were dying, and they just wanted to be like, help us, all my friends are dying.
Yeah, that's the other big thing, was everyone was dying at that point. That was a dark time for wrestling, because every little bit you'd hear, oh, so now we, Josh, have we, knock on wood, we haven't up to this point had to do a podcast on someone passing away that was employed by the WWE in a little bit. Well, I think the last real big one that we did was Piper.
But he was on a Legends deal, and Dusty, and like they, but... I think the thing with the Dusty one and the Piper one, even though the Piper one still shocks me to this day, it just kind of came out of nowhere. They were still older. I mean, they still probably had a lot of life left, but it wasn't like, it was like, okay, well, you know, they were up there in age.
It wasn't the under 40.
It's not like the Brian Pillman situation.
No. It wasn't like, because Dusty, let's just put it this way, Dusty and Piper had their careers. Their families could have used them for many more years, but their careers had been done. So that part was taken away, and then you're just sad about them just being gone, period. But with other wrestlers like Pillman or Owen, it's like there's just so much left in their career, and then it's also, of course, their family side as well and everything else.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So, you know, there have been steps forward. There needs to be more steps taken. But this whole thing, it's a tragedy. Cut and dry, pure and simple. It was a tragedy that had so many explosive mixtures that it just so happened that everything lined up on that fateful June weekend in 2007. That, I mean, we hear those stories of Benoit even wanting to make vengeance, booking a flight and potentially coming out and wrestling at the pay-per-view.
And I'm not going to lie, selfishly, at the time, even after hearing the news, I kind of wanted that because selfishly, and Punk even said this, selfishly I wanted that match. And selfishly, I wanted to see CM Punk versus Chris Benoit.
Yeah. That would have, I think that would have been a death blow to the company if that had happened, because they would have been vilified even more so because...
Oh, yeah.
this guy had wrestled on your program and he'd done these horrific acts back home, and he was
probably and he almost did it. Like he almost went. He was considering it.
Yeah, and that's the that, like, it just sounds like a guy.
And he would have won the belt too, and then the whole kind of trickle down of, like, what do we do with this belt now? Like, is this belt tarnished forever now? Could we legit let a murderer win the belt? Like, he had just murdered his wife and he won our belt?
It was a mess. Yeah.
And that's the best way to describe it. It's a mess. Do I miss having Chris Benoit to root for on my TV? Yeah. But at the end of the day, he killed his wife and his kid. The same two people that you saw at the end of WrestleMania 20. And that was that highlight, that package is forever tarnished in my memory because that's what they used on the news over and over and over and over and over again. It's him hugging Daniel and him hugging Nazi and him and Eddie together and him holding up that big shiny gold belt. This is probably the toughest podcast I'll ever have to do because it just, even 10 years later, it still makes me uncomfortable. Like, people will bring up Benoit and I'll just try to go away from the subject because it's just no, I'm not too big on it and I don't want to talk about it because
Mo?
It's just
I know you have something important to get to, Josh, so I will be really quick here.
No, nothing's more important than this. Go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I saw Chris Benoit's first match. I don't have memory of it, but I know I saw it because it used to be, I mean, Stampede Wrestling, and I used to be out and playing basketball. And I'd take off, I'd be like, no, wrestling's on, Stampede Wrestling, and everybody get pissed off at me, and I'd be like, I don't care. Stampede Wrestling's on. You know, love Stampede Wrestling more than WWF back then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was really ours, right? It was ours.
It was something different about it, the energy and the realism and the intensity. And I do remember this young kid wrestling. I think he was like 17 or 18 at the time. I mean, he was really young. And he didn't really stand out so much in those early days because you had Owen Hart around the same time. You had Ben Bassarap, who had a very similar look, and people like Yushin Thunder Liger came through there, you know, unmasked at the time and on Excursion, and Hiro Hase and legends like that, for Brian Pillman. I mean, there was great talent around the same time. It was when he won the title. I remember him. I remember the match of him winning the title from the Great Gama, whose own legacy lives on through Jinder Mahal now. Whatever legacy that is again, a whole other discussion. And I remember him winning it and just being kind of surprised. And that was cool. And he was young, and I was like, oh, maybe he does have something to him. And, of course, that was kind of Gama's role, was he was the guy who always had the belt. And then he would he would use it to put over a young guy who probably was going to move on from the territory eventually, and then he'd get it back, you know, before the guy moved on. He really came on my radar. This is a moment that it's kind of infamous. A Dynamite Kid gave him his wrestling boots on Stampede Wrestling. And a lot of people are embarrassed because Dynamite Kid found out embarrassing. Dynamite Kid was drunk or high or whatever and said it was an embarrassing moment. All I know is, as a kid, I didn't know that the Dynamite Kid was drunk, and they managed to put it on TV. He came out and he said, this is the guy who will carry on my legacy. This is the guy, I'm giving him my boots. It was a symbol. It was a huge symbol, much more so than a belt. That was where I went, holy shit, this kid's got to be special. Because Dynamite Kid, the great Dynamite Kid, maybe the greatest in-ring performer in history, is telling me that this is the kid. And that was where, for me, Chris Benoit, I became my level of fandom and my level of respect went to a whole other level, was when that happened. And then I followed him through, like I say, through Japan as best I could, and ECW and these different things. And then he shows up in WCW and has, he has great matches. And he used to come to the ring. He would get a massive reaction. And it would last the whole way down. And he didn't do anything. And that was a pop. That wasn't a pop because he was cool or because he had a great gimmick. That was a respect pop. He had their respect. And I respected that. But I can almost look back on, I've looked back on that first win against Great Gama, and I smile, and I don't feel any guilt, because that person is not the person that killed Daniel. not the person that killed Nancy and killed himself. That 17, 18-year-old fresh-faced kid who loved wrestling represents what I love about wrestling. And I feel no guilt for that, for smiling at that. And I want to thank you guys. I hope next time we can have a little more fun. But this has been good for me. And I think I kind of, it's helped me get to that point, is that thinking that young kid, that kid that was given those boots by Dynamite, I can smile at him because that's a good kid who loves wrestling. And, you know, so do I.
Well said, Mo. For me, I think you echoed a lot of the things that I wanted to say. So I think, you know, I can still, I think I'm one of the few that can still, I'm not going to go out of my way to ever watch a Benoit match. It's just not going to happen. But if it comes up, I'll watch it. And it's still weird to me. And I don't know if it's appropriate to say a joke, but every year that Royal Rumble comes around, Joel and I will look at each other when Michael Cole inevitably says, two men have won from the number one spot. Shawn Michaels has won. And Joel and I will always be like, who's the other? Who's this mystery man? And on little weird trivia note, on ESPN in 2004, they have the Royal Rumble winner listed as Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, that's interesting. And they always talk about the longest lasting guy being Ray. And of course, it's Eddie. Or sorry, it's Chris, you know.
So we will miss him, but at the same time, we will revile him.
Yeah.
So thanks, everyone, for listening. Give us your feedback. And until next time, cheers and enjoy the day, people.